All right, Chaver, good evening. I would like to thank Benny for sharing with me his notes. And one of the many great advantages of having the halachic series given over by Rabbi Tauber is that there's a tremendous amount of halachis. And I would say that perhaps in the last couple of weeks, we have been learning a lot more by heart than that from the inside. And I think that's a positive thing because he's sharing with us very practical halachas of Chasher Mishpat. There's going to be, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, max, a bechina. Just the details have to be worked out with him. And therefore, just for the recording, that I was limited with time today. I did not have the time properly needed to go over everything that he taught. If not for Benny's notes, I would only be able to read from the Shulchan Aruch. I put down on a paper the best that I could, and there were many other probably very important halachas, dinim, stories that we need to know, especially for those who want to take the quiz, and even for the other ones. It's a chaval, it's a pity to learn it and not to review it. Okay. We'll see when that happens. We'll cross the bridge when we get there. Okay, so we left off when we made our last review. The last thing we learned was Dina de Malchus Adina, and even on that, again, Rabbi Tauber is very clear and very opinionated, and it's really worthwhile for people on the internet. We just titled that class Dina de Malchus Adina, and we spent an hour and a half learning about it, and we left off last time when we made our review on Hilchas Niske Mamon in the beginning. Hilchas Niske Mamon in the new Shulchan Aruch begins on page Kuf Chaf, and Rabbi Tauber did not learn all of the halachis, but he learned many of the halachis, and then we began Hilchas Niske Haguf V'Nefesh V'Dineihem. Okay, so let's begin first with the first halachas, Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet Hei Vav. Halacha Aleph, quickly, yeah? Kuf Chaf. You don't have that page. So it's Hilchas Niske Mamon. Choshe Mishpat, there aren't any numbers to the Samana. Hilchas Niske Mamon, we haven't hit 25 Seifim, Halacha 1. The Alter Rebbe paskins that it's prohibited. He's quoting over here from the Shulchan Aruch that it's Osir Lahazik Mamon Chaveri, that a person is prohibited to cause damage to one's fellow's monetary property, to one's fellow's money, even if he's doing it with the intent to pay him back. Equal as the prohibition of stealing with the intent of paying back. Just because you intend to pay it back, it gives you no right to damage. Okay, simple. Now the Alter Rebbe begins going into something not so simple. That this halacha and this prohibition of damaging doesn't only refer to direct damages, but afilu ligroim nezek lechaveri. But even what's called in halacha hagrama, goyrim, causative. And once you're speaking about a causing of a damage, we obviously understand there's a very large gray area. There's direct cause and indirect cause, groma, garmi, right, a groma of a groma, and these are very complicated halachas, so this is just a quick synopsis, that this prohibition, the chiddush, also includes that one is prohibited to cause even a cause of damage, both through one's act or through one's words. And what would it mean, an example where someone through his words can cause damage? The Alter Rebbe says, for example, if Reuven sold merchandise to a goy, and they made up a deal, they made up a sale, the goy was willing to pay for it. Comes along Shimon and he tells the goy that why you are overpaying for the merchandise. Reuven would not have been violating any prohibition of overcharging a goy, even though that on certain movable items, on metaltolin, by the Torah law, there's a concept called oina'a, which means that there's a certain market value, and I'm not allowed to charge more than a sixth, more than the market value. But that prohibition is only between a Jew and a Jew. But a Jew can charge a goy any amount of money, so long as the goy agreed to pay. So the Jew wasn't violating any yisurim. There's a law of Aina. When a Jew sells merchandise to another Jew, then there is, by Torah law, there is a prohibition of me overcharging a sixth more than the market value, only if I let the goy know to begin with, this is worth a dollar. However, I am only going to sell it to you for 10.
To
a Jew, if you say those words, then you're allowed to do it to everyone, if you notified him. But if you didn't notify him, it's called fooling him. You fooled him because you were selling merchandise and he thought that he's getting the fair price by you, and you overcharged them more than a sixth. Let's not get into this right now. The point is that the Alter Rebbe paskens that there is no din of Einoa by a goy, and therefore what Reuven was doing was not prohibited.
How does this differ from what Yuli said, that you're allowed to make a bad deal, right? You know, we talk about partnership.
That's when both parties know they're making a bad deal.
No. This is merchandise. There's a difference between deal for services and this is merchandise.
I would say by merchant.
I'm going to a business with you and I rip you off. There's nothing wrong with that.
Let's not get sidetracked. Let's not, Danny, get into the laws of Einoa. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim, Melech Haolam, Shachar Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Different amount of contract, entering into a negotiation of contract, and buying a product.
When someone goes to you for your service, and they know that you have a fair price, and you go ahead and you charge them because they won't know, that you know they're not going to do the homework, and you charge them more than a sixth, more than you would charge an average person. That's called Einoa. And one is prohibited to do that to a Jew, and one is permitted to do it to a goy. Comes along Shimon, and Shimon tells the goy, why are you paying more than the market value? And because of those words that he told to the goy goes back to the oven, and he wants to renegotiate the price down. So what Shimon did through his words was causing a damage to Reuven. That is also prohibited. Another din, v'chein, mi sheroitza levroyach l'lashalam ha-shechayv l'nachri. If a person...
But he can't ask for the money, right?
Excuse me?
He can't go to Shimon and ask for damage.
We're going to get to it in a second. One second. A minute. If a person owes money to a guy, and he does not have how to pay him back, okay? And he has part to pay back, but he doesn't have all the money to pay back. So he's hiding from the goy, because he's afraid that if the goy is going to find him and he won't be able to pay back the full amount of money, the goy is going to have the power to incarcerate him. So he's hiding. Some money he has. Comes along Shimon and tells the goy, Reuven owes you money, he's there. At least get what you could. Also legalus lehem. You're not allowed to reveal it to the goy. And whoever does that, even though he's not called a masur, as we'll see later, a masur, which is a very serious law, refers to giving a person over to the hands of the authorities, not giving over someone's money to the hands of the authorities. Right? Shadei, another definition here will be that a masur is when you are causing someone damage. And here you're not causing anyone damage because he owes them the money. In both cases, or he was overcharging him. So in a case where you're giving, where you're doing something which is not causing someone a damage, you're just making sure that everything happens in an honest way, that is not under the category of a masid. Nevertheless, Alter Rebbe paskins that mikol makim ro gadol la'asa, it's something which is very negative. And skipping the parentheses, v'chalagoydim nezik l'chaveroi, and even in such a case, in the cases that we mentioned, I'm causing my fellow Jew a nezek, even though that he owed the money. But if not for my telling the goy, he wouldn't have lost the money. Potter midinei adam, that's the answer to your question, Danny. And I'm chayev midinei shamayim. Chayev midinei shamayim halachically doesn't only mean that one is held accountable to God, but it means that if I want to redeem my sin, I have to pay the damage that I caused, but Reuven cannot take Shimon to a din Torah and demand it from him and win the din Torah. That's called Patri Medinei Adam. But Shimon, if Shimon now wants to do tshuva, I caused Reuven to lose money because I told the goy that he's overpaying. There's the only way to find forgiveness, to get forgiveness, is by him paying Reuven the money that he caused him to lose. Halacha number two. Another very important halacha. Vafilu imbo hanezek olav. Another example of causing damages is if damage is coming upon someone There is a natural disaster. Something is heading my way. And my protecting my property will cause that my neighbor's property will be even more damaged. So the Alter Rebbe writes that once the damage is already on its way, it's prohibited for me to save myself through causing more damage to my neighbor. When is this said? When the damage is already coming, when the river is already coming down. But before the damage is coming, Aval Koidim Shebo HaNezek Olov, if before the damage began, I'm allowed to build a wall around my house which would stop water from coming in if there is a flood, even though that would mean that more water would flood to my neighbor. Because when I built the wall, the damage was not present yet. This is a very important halacha. Just parenthetically, we spoke on Tuesday night class about the whole Gilad Shalit story and how the pros and the cons, and a lot of it has to do, it's not money, there it's life, but it's a certain principle is the same, that freeing one is going to make other people die because they're demanding for terrorists to be released. So this is the question, I mean, to save his life, you're saving his life, but you're causing other people's lives to get, God forbid, potentially killed. That's part of the challenge of the situation over there. In Din HaMamonos, it's very clear. I don't want to compare it completely, but here in Din HaMamonos, we have this idea, before the damage began, I can do things which, even though I know by doing it, by building the dam around my house, by putting up the sandbags, and my neighbor is not doing it, my neighbor will get more flooding in his house. But once the water is already here, I'm not allowed to do that. That's called causing damage. And I'm just protecting myself, but I'm causing damage to my friend. Halacha Gimel is similar. In those days, it was normal that when the soldiers passed through towns, it was by the law that everyone was obligated to house whatever the general decided. You have a house of one bedroom, you're housing one soldier, two bedrooms, two soldiers. And a person had the ability to bribe the general and to make sure that the soldiers don't stay in their homes. And these soldiers caused tremendous spiritual damage, for sure. Sometimes physical damage. You don't know who these people are. So the thing is that if I'm going to pay off the general that my house should not be on the list of houses that need to house soldiers, well, all of the soldiers are sleeping in the city. So if it's one less in my house, then it's one more in someone else's house. So it's the same concept. Before they came to the city, I'm allowed to do that. But once they came to the city, then I'm allowed to bribe him off. And the same thing goes in any similar taxes, that once the decree was made, once the damage is there, and my intent is only to protect myself, but if I know that doing that would overburden someone else, then I'm prohibited to cause, that's called a gram hezek. And again, if I do it, I'm exempt. You can't take me to a din toira, but I'm chayiv medinei shamayim. Clear. Right. Yes. Yes.
Let's say you turn on, you live in St. Louis, along the Mississippi, you turn on the weather channel, and you know that 5 days from now, there's going to be there's likely to be flooding, or there's going to be flooding. But you have a significant lead time.
How much time is needed? We're going to learn later on the law about me not allowed to damage my neighbor's wall. Again, this is... And the Alter Rebbe says, you're not allowed to put water near the neighbor's wall. And Rabbi Tauber just pointed out, the Alter Rebbe didn't mention it, that it says in the Mishnah that you're allowed to plant a tree, even though eventually the roots of the tree might damage the neighbor's wall. So there is a time factor. And the wording what Rabbi Tauber said is that when I water my neighbor's wall, it's not about the amount of damage, but the damage is happening immediately. And when I'm planting a tree, when I do the act of planting a tree, there is no damage immediately. But the damage is going to come later. So this is like your question. So you're asking, how do you define immediately? I don't know. These are the real tachlisdika questions. And some of them are not even clear. You have to have a very wise bezdin to know.
Didn't he say if the thing is there, like he used the flood example?
But again, let's say,
use... What does there mean?
As long as the water is not there, once the river is flooding and it's sweeping into your place, for you to then put the sandbag, it's pushing it to the other side.
Correct. Okay, Danny is right. In the case of the flood, it says clear. As long as the water didn't hit my field, I'm allowed to do it. Clear.
Right.
Correct.
As long as it's
correct.
The nezek is not there.
Correct.
So I,
There you go. Okay, Vaitre.
Okay. Calvert added that in Muncie, claiming to be a rabbi, being exempt from property taxes,
that would be another example where. Because it's the same concept, exactly.
Right. Same community,
Because the tax was decreed on this place. The government needs from this city 100. And now it's just a matter of distribution. And if I'm going to pay less, someone else is going to pay more. And that's prohibited for me to do that if I'm not doing it kosher. Now, if it's taka, the guy has a shul and he's exempt, he's allowed to do things kosher. All right, halacha dalet. Excuse me. Same thing. If the soldiers came to the city already, if they're there already, and now it's just the campers, which camper is going to which bunk, then you can't bribe the general. But if you know that they're coming, but they're not here yet, then go ahead. The damage is not here in the city yet. Go and exempt yourself. Very good point. I don't know what to answer. Good point. Good point. That's why I'll go back to what I said before, that when it comes to gram, when it comes to causality, what's the word in English? Causalities. Causalities is a very, even in the Gemara, it's very difficult to put your finger on it. Because once it's not direct, and you chive already for a cause, there's a lot of gray area. There's always going to be gray area. And I know that in the bottom line is there is gray area. And there's a lot of disagreements because of that.
Now, we discuss the shekels.
No, we didn't discuss the shekels here. But that we discussed it beforehand. But you know, when people from ignorance decided that certain shekels are not are connected to Avodah Zarah, and they gave a ruling, and based on the ruling, people went ahead and burnt the shekels. I don't think that's causality. That was a direct, that's, I think that's already a direct damage.
Because they didn't check right, they caused damage.
Well, forget about why they didn't know. But what their ruling is more than a gram, I think. When you rule this is Avodah Zarah, that's damage. That's direct damage. Psak din is direct damage.
Yeah,
it's not a groma. Here, the guy told the goy, and now the goy, because of it, had to do something else to renegotiate, to pay less money. Here, his ruling is the rule. That's it.
Well, you want
to destroy it, though. You move from your house, you take your oven, then you went ahead and destroy it. No. Halacha dalet. Not correct. Okay, we'll skip halacha dalet. Halacha hey. Imamin chaveri mazikas mamin shaloi. He skipped halacha dalet. If what happens, if we're not speaking about a person damaging, if someone else's money is damaging my money, someone else's animal, he gave an example of a dog, I think. Someone else's dog is coming to bite my dog. So, one approach would be, okay, let it happen, and then I'll take him to a din Torah. The Alter Rebbe says no. The Alter Rebbe says that if I'm able to save my money, even if the only way of doing it is by hurting someone else's money directly, I'm permitted to do that, and again, I don't have to wait for it to happen, and then I'm going to take him to a din Torah. So, prevention of damages to me, I have the right to take the law in my own hand and to prevent the damages. However, I have a responsibility. When we call Mokim in the end of the page, Chayv Lamayit Benezik Chaveroi Kol Mashaefshet, I got to minimize the damage as much as possible. And obviously, the Alter Rebbe writes that Vim Efshet Lelahatel Shaloi Belenezik Chaveroi Ali Dei Toirach, that if I'm able to save my dog without damaging my neighbor's dog, even if that demands a lot of work on my part. So halacha doesn't say time is money and work is money. No, then I have an obligation to shvitz hard, to have the tircha, and to protect myself without causing a penny of damage to my friend. I have that obligation. The permissibility of damaging someone else's property to save my own is only if there is no other option other than to damage their property. Why will it cost you X?
No, because I will have to work, I will have to do something.
No. If it's going to cost you money, then you're not obligated to do it. Altadeb was speaking about a case where your work will not cost you money.
Let's say you are a plastic surgeon and you will have to become
the shovel. I mean, for you, that's damage. That's like, you can't do
it. Not, why is it damage? I'm a plastic surgeon.
Maybe the next day your head is going to shake again.
No, that's not called.
The
standard case, we learned above Mitzvah, if I rent a cow. Today, if you rent a car and the car doesn't work exactly, you get a new car.
Right.
We learned, if I rented from you a donkey and the reason was I needed to get Schreider from A to B, and then in the middle the donkey became weak, and because the donkey became weak, I have to work with the donkey, I cannot get any money back from you because I got the service. In other words, even though I needed to work, we don't say time is money and let me get compensated for that. We don't have that concept.
Because you leave it at the person. He can make that determination.
Correct.
That he wants all to
right.
Get the money.
All right. Now, the Alter Rebbe just adds that if I chose not to schwitz hard to protect my dog without hurting my neighbor's dog, and I went and I hurt my neighbor's dog, then I'm potem edin ayodim. Right? But I'm chayim edin ashamayim. I have to know the tircha is needed, lotzei sidei shamayim. And this is considered, this is included in the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, that if just like God obligated me to spend effort and time in tircha to save my fellow's property and not to walk by it, this is part of that mitzvah. So really, the dog is attacking my dog, I can hit him and break his leg. But since through working hard I can save my own without breaking a leg, that's part of Hashavas Aveda. Okay, good. Halacha Zayin. Here's where things get very interesting, and it's good to read it inside a lot of times, which I did not do myself today, to understand what Alter Rebbe is saying clearly. But I can definitely give over a couple of very important points that Rabbi Tauber made that is not written inside. Now we're beginning to learn not about that causing damage to my fellow's property. Now we're talking about giving over a Jew in the hands of goyim. That's called mesira. So also limser Yisrael. Biad nachim. I am not allowed to give over a Jew, to report a Jew, that he should be under the dominion of a goy, bein begufoy, bein nemoinoy, regardless if my reporting him is going to be something in which he will be incarcerated, or me denouncing him is going to cost for his money to be taken away. And regardless if I'm doing it with talking, with tattletaling on him, revealing things that he has hidden, even if the goy only wants to get straw, and he only wants me to let him know where the straw is, and even if I don't say a word, I just point, and I show the goy what you're looking for, and I point with my fingers over there. So this is the definition of a masur, and a masur is terrible, and one amongst the many things, he loses his entire portion to the world to come. More than that, even if the person is a wicked person, and he's doing a lot of avedas, doesn't justify for me to report him, and again, not to the police, if the police are going to go after him bodily way, or even if my reporting him or denouncing him is only going to cause him a penalty, a monetary penalty, and even afilu hu meitzalei umetzalei tamid bedvarim, and even if this Russia is always bothering me, so he's not my friend, doesn't matter. I'm allowed to master him. Aval im masroi muter la masroi b'makim sheyesh chashad sheyach shel v'yim sirenu. But if that person who's the rasha and the bal aveira, if he is someone who masters other people, so now to prevent him from doing so, I'm allowed to master him. Okay, that's very important. And the same concept goes on people who hit. Someone is a hitter, he's hitting people. So that he says that if a person is constantly doing it, and the only way you can protect in a society stopping him is by calling the police, then it's a mitzvah, he says, for you to call the police, and even if the consequence would be that they're going to cut his hand off for hitting people. Rabbi Tauber said a story from the Noidi B'Yehuda regarding what a Beis Din did, that the Noidi B'Yehuda found out in his city that there was a grandfather that was molesting his granddaughter, and he called him into Beis Din, and he cut two of his fingers off. In other words, when we mentioned about cutting the hands off, you know, in order to enforce law and order, you can take extraordinary measures. And so we got into the concept that you are allowed to call the police if someone is constantly harassing people. However, Aval Mishi Hika Chaveri Bakra, if someone only hits people every now and then, it's a very an occasional thing. So he says, even the guy who got hit by him that one time is not allowed to call the police on him. And I want to say what Rabbi Tauber said, and that's why it's good to have a practicing rabbi, that this halacha, repeating what Rabbi Tauber says, is not something that we should practice. Rabbi Tauber advocated people calling the police even if someone hits only once. And he explained that in the olden days that Rabbanim had a lot more power. That's when he brought up the Noi Dibihod, the story. And therefore they had the power. If someone hit someone, there was a checks and balances within the Jewish community. That today the rabbi doesn't have any real authority, and you're not allowed to let a society go without law and order. And if a person will hit and no consequence will happen, in the longer term there'll be a lot of consequence. People will be hitting each other. So he clearly says that so you hit someone once, full responsibility. Rabbi Tauber said, go call the police on him. All right. However, on the other hand, wherever you're not allowed to call the police, he said a story of the Maharam of Rottenburg, a famous story, and he wrote a whole tshuva about it. So the Maharam of Rottenburg lived in Vermeisen, Worms in Germany. He's buried there. And he lived at the same time of Eliyahu Baal Shem. And he was a big halachic authority. And Reuven, Reuven went ahead and massacred Shimon when he was not allowed to. And he mastered Shimon, I think, for monetary, it should have been something that the police only would have taken money from Shimon. But when the police came to arrest Shimon, Shimon resisted. And because he resisted, the police beat him, and they ended up killing him. It was an accident. So the Maram of Rottenburg considered Reuven a murderer, a Ritzayach. So he just wanted to say, so on one hand he said, call the police. Today, wherever you're living in a society in which the rabbis don't have a real authority to penalize someone for hitting, so you don't have to wait for someone to become a total disaster to master him, call the police right away. On the other hand, wherever you're not allowed to, that the responsibility, you think you're only calling the police and it's only going to cause the guy to lose money, you don't know where this is going to lead, and if it leads to bodily damage, you're responsible. And if, God forbid, it leads to that person dying, then the one who mastered him is considered a Ritzayach. Okay. Next.
You mentioned a couple other things.
Yes.
There's a story about the Vina Masechet that we learned.
Could be. Rafu?
Kavina.
That? Okay.
Ravina?
No.
Kavina. Something about he was a Tom Cotton and he hit somebody and something like that.
I don't know. Right. No, neither do I. Okay, that he said many times. Domestic violence. See, by domestic violence, even according to what Alter Rebbe writes in the book, Alter Rebbe says if you do something once, you can't call the police. Rabbi Tauber says call the police. He's not contradicting the Alter Rebbe. He's just bringing it down to our generation. That's what Rabbi Tauber says. That there's no such a thing as a wife beater or God forbid a molester. These are activities which the rule is if you did it once, you're going to do it again.
This is where he mentions.
No. Wasn't it? Right there.
He also mentioned that if you're both doing illegal activity, then because he was talking about if you know that someone's going to monster you, you can go monster him first.
That's what Dalton said.
If both are doing illegal activity,
I'll get to that in a minute by the Marshal. One second. I'll get to the Maiseder. Okay. Vafilu. Another thing. Dalton Rebbe Paskins. When it comes to the inyan of Mesira, and he says that's a very big chumrah of the Alter Rebbe, that whenever you're not allowed to call another Jew, you're not allowed to report him to the authorities, that includes even in the case where you went to a din Torah, and that person did not obey the din Torah. So according to most of the halachic authorities, once that person did not listen to the din Torah, you are automatically allowed now to take him to court for monetary issues. But the Alter Rebbe paskins that even after the person did not listen to a din Torah, you have to go back to the Beis Din, just another step. It will happen, and you have to get permission from the Beis Din to take him to a din Torah. In other words, we learned a lot of Niskei Momon deals with the severity of the concept of Mesira. And to understand, we need to understand when is it permitted and when is it prohibited. So, and
but if you take them to court, is that called Mesira?
Yes. Mesira is bein b'mamoine. Yeah, that if you're reporting him, and you're reporting him will make that person be held accountable on a monetary level, you're a Muslim.
No, but held accountable is different than me and him having a monetary dispute, right? I mean, if I know a guy that's cheating on a tax, and I go rat the guy to the IRS,
we're not talking about that.
Presumably that guy's a Muslim, right? The guy that rats him out. No. But if me and Benny have a financial dispute, and for whatever reason he doesn't want to go to Bezdin, you know, for me to say, okay, fine, you know, I'll sue you in court, whatever, that's called the zero?
Of course. You're taking him to court, and the court is gonna hold him accountable for a monetary thing that Itaka owes you. You're not allowed to do that. You have to go to a Beis Din, and whoever does it doesn't have a chelik lo'ilam habo. Yes.
The taxes is different.
Because you owe them. See, Mesira.
When I think of Mesira, I would say, hey, you're doing something, and I'm gonna go rat on you.
Okay, let's go like this. Al Rebbe writes in Halacha Aleph like this, that whenever the court is going to end up forcing you to pay that which you owe already, that's not called Mesira. Wherever the court is going to force you to pay something which halachically you don't owe, then you masered. Now know one thing, that many hilch dinim amanus, Torah law and the court law are not the same. So there's a very big possibility that by taking someone to court, one of the things that Rabbi Tauber spoke a lot later, but for him it was important, that there isn't such a concept of being penalized for emotional trauma in Shulchan Aruch, in Torah law. The closest thing he found to emotional trauma is the concept of shame. But aside of shame, he made it clear that the concept of tsa'ar is physical tsa'ar. There's a machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos. This we learn together. If it's short-term pain or long-term pain, but it's never emotional pain. So when you take someone to court, if the psak of the court was that one guy has to pay the other guy monies which al pi din toyri he doesn't owe him, then I think you're called a muser. Yes.
What if you're suing the guy's insurance company? So someone's insured. You're really suing them, but it's really the insurance company, and you're trying to get the punitives out of the insurance company. Is that a muser?
I don't think so, but ask it to Rabbi Tauber. I don't think so.
That's because you need to go to the Beis Din. If the Beis Din gives you permission, you can go.
I'm not taking the insurance company to bed.
You need to go to the Beis Din.
I don't know the answer, Benny. Okay, there's a very the challenge here is that you have to be tremendously knowledgeable because of the two sides. On one hand, that's what he kept going back and forth. You cannot allow for society to go on without law and order. Rabbi Tauber here in Elias from the Rabbanim, from the first thing, call the police. He's not afraid. He has the knowledge to tell people, you're allowed to go to the police. And not only that, you're obligated to call the police to make sure that the society, saying, he was giving examples, you know, people fight sometimes. He says, fight, right away call the police if it became physical. On the other hand, if you're a Moser, the Marami Rottenberg, so you have to have a lot of knowledge. So the solution would be, ask a Rav. Call up a Rav who you trust is very knowledgeable here and ask him what you should do. And don't take this in your own hands, because if you make a mistake, God forbid, who knows what this can lead to. Okay. Halacha Zayin. Huh? Hamayser mutter lohargoy. If someone is a masur, side of him not having a chelik in Olam Haba, you're allowed to kill him. When are you allowed to kill him? Not revenge after he did it, but you are allowed to kill him to prevent him from doing it. That's the chumrus of maser. That means if a guy says, I'm going to maser someone, even only for money, and only for a small amount of money, he made himself available to be killed. And they warn him and they tell him, don't do that. And if the guy says, I'm going to do it, so then the Alter Rebbe paskins mitzvah lahargoy. Not only are you allowed to kill him, it's a mitzvah to kill him. and whoever kills him first got the zchus. Lefi shahoylech limsa mamim yisrael biyad nachrim. If you're giving over yiddish money in the hands of a goyim, you're the din of a roidif, and you're allowed to kill a roidif. It's a mitzvah to kill a roidif, and again, if you can stop him without killing him, like by cutting off his tongue, Alter Rebbe writes, or by blinding him in the eyes, then you can do that. But if you can't, then you go ahead and kill him.
Did he tell the story of Ohana Wasserman?
Which?
The famous story with Ohana Wasserman and the Maser.
Those are the right, good. I don't know if he mentioned it here.
I think he mentioned
it. Okay, a long time ago. Okay. Now we skipped halacha tes, and continuing on this concept that you are allowed to kill a masur, but if you can blind him or cut his tongue out, do that. So the Alter Rebbe in halacha tes gives you a little bit of a more another suggestion. Sometimes when someone masurs, when you call the police, not everything you're going to tell the police, they listen to you. Some people have a power with the authorities only because of their wealth. And if you were to take their wealth away, they wouldn't be in the position of respect, and they wouldn't be listened to, and they wouldn't have the power to maser. So that's another solution, halacha tes. Umi in page kuf chafei, umi shahuchzik v'mesiris. If someone is constantly mastering other people, but it seems she'ein davar b'nishmoyim, that the only reason why the authorities are listening to him is only because he's wealthy. And if he becomes poor, and if he becomes poor, then the authorities wouldn't listen to him. Okay, so then that's the solution. So then muter la'abed memoinoi, then destroy his money, or give his money away to the goyim, because by doing that you are disabling his power of being a masur. Okay, I think it was here. That he quoted a very famous tshuva of the Maharshal. I know he repeated it to my memory at least twice, and it is indeed a very important tshuva. Because now that we learn about you're not allowed to, you know, snitch on another Jew. So, when it comes to money, again, this differentiation, if he owes money, then I'm not called a maser. But if the Jew is going to go to jail, then I'm a moiser. Regardless if he did the crime to go to jail or not, in normal circumstances, if he's not a hindrance to the society, you have to have that balance. So Rabbi Tauber says that he remembered that in his younger years, one of the big shilas that came to him was that someone was selling knockoffs. I mean, someone was making merchandise and putting Nike on it or putting some type of brand name illegally, and there was like this big distributor. And a yid in his kahila bought this merchandise, did not know that this merchandise is a knockoff, and sold it. And the FBI came to him, and the FBI told him that we know that you're innocent, but you have to tell us who sold it to you. Now, he understood that if he's going to name the seller, it's not going to be a monetary issue, it's going to be the guy's going to go to jail. Mesira, you are allowed, and by the FBI, if you don't tell them, but then you're going to go to jail. So what's the din over here? So, I mean, everything begins in Allah Yud. I'll tell you what the Marshal says. Allah Nachri Onas Shonas Yisrael Halasim Amechaveroi. If a goy is coming and he's forcing a Jew to show me where someone else has money, and the Jew is afraid that if he will not tell the goy where the other person's money is, the goy is going to hurt him physically. So the Alter Rebbe rules like this: Im yesh chashash sakana l'gufay. If the Jew who's being threatened by the mafioso, show me where Chaim's money is, if not, I'm going to hurt you, and he's afraid to get hurt. Right? Since pikuach nefesh is above everything else, so he's allowed to show the mafioso, or in this case, it would be the government, where someone else is hiding the money, you're allowed to be a masur, because by doing that you're saving yourself from a life-threatening situation. So that's the first thing you got to understand. Even though the Alter Rebbe rules, Later on, if the mafioso goes and takes Chaim's money away, you have to pay Chaim the money. That was the case then that you mentioned. In other words, that I am allowed to protect myself by giving someone over because my life is in danger, but I'm chayif to pay him the money.
Whether he pulls into them or not?
Regardless, a mafioso, totally not. In other words, a guy comes to me and he says, I want a mafia guy, let's give him. And he tells me, Avram, tell me where Donnie has money. And if not, we're going to hurt you. So I'm allowed to show him, and they're coming to you, shalike it in. And I'm allowed to do that because I'm saving my life with your money. I'm not allowed to save my money, but I'm saving my life with your money, but I owe you the money. And Rabbi Tauber said that when it comes to federal jail, your life is not in danger. That's what his opinion. He says in a state jail, certain jails, you're pikuach nefesh. But certain jails in America, like when he went back to the FBI, your life wasn't in danger. And if you're not going to master the other yid, you're not going to get to, you're going to go to jail. There's no chashash takana l'guf v'nefesh. So what's the din? Are you allowed to tell the FBI agent or not? So he quoted the tshuva of the Maharshal. The Maharshal was Rav Shlomo Luria, who happened to be a distant relative of the Arizal. It's actually a story. They didn't directly meet each other, but there was once a famous din Torah in which they gave different rulings, and the Arizal sent people to justify himself for the famous Maharshal, which was, I think, a Rav in Cracovia. He was a big, big European, Eastern European rabbi. And the Marshal wrote like this, in the case of the knockoffs, that if the Jew who was involved in selling illegal merchandise was taka innocent, and he didn't know that he's doing something illegal, that means he was used by the ganef, he's 100% allowed to point a finger at him, even if his life is not in danger. That's a big truth of the Marshal. And that's what Rabbi Tauber told. And if you knew that you're participating in selling illegal merchandise, then everything is different. Then, going back to this din, you're not allowed to master him. Only if your life is in danger, and that guy's money, so it's your life against his money, so save your life, but pay him the money. Oh.
If you did know, and your life is in danger, you still can't correct your life.
If you
were part of the
but your life is in danger.
The Marshal said you still can't.
Oh no, the Marshal didn't say that. No. The Altareba says, if my life is in danger, and I'm not saving my life with your life, I'm allowed to do that. I'm saving my life with your money. That I'm obligated to do. I'm obligated to save my life with your money. But I owe you the money.
Even if you're part of the crime.
Doesn't matter. Right now I'm facing either I might get killed, and you might lose money. So, let me save my life, and if you lose the money, and I mastered you, then pay. Logic, it makes sense.
You said that he has to repay.
Excuse me?
If the person points his finger and they take the property, Reuven has to repay that property, right?
Correct.
So what's the difference between that and the beginning when we learned that if you tell a guy where the money is, it's only DNA, you're putting the DNA.
No. Before we were learning in a case where the guy didn't
give no involvement.
No. Where the guy did not owe, the guy owed the money.
That's between the parties. Here it's not here
they didn't owe anything. They just want to steal his property.
Correct. That's the case in Alochiyot.
What if I know?
Here they want to steal his money. A mafia wants to steal money. Rabbi Talbi here mentioned the case of the Maharshal. So you're going to the taxes issue, and he didn't really want to get into address taxes too much. Because you can argue that if taxes, you taka owe the taxes, then even if you master the guy for the taxes, and you cause him to pay more tax, he owed the money anyway. But at least let's get it clear. So let's make a quick review of the review. If I master someone, and I'm causing that person to pay what he owed, I'm not called a master. If I mastered someone, and I put him into bodily danger, because he was arrested, then I'm called a master. If I cause a Jew to fall in the hands of the non-Jewish authorities, and the non-Jewish authorities are going to take something from the Jew that is not in accordance to the laws of Torah, then I'm, God forbid, called a maser. Clear? Huh? So Rabbi Tauber said clearly not. So that's why you got to learn dinu machos dinah. Anything that they take, in so much that they have the right to take it, Not only do they have the right to take it, but if they take it through a Jew who works for them, the Jew did nothing wrong. But if al pi din Torah you didn't owe the money, and if me not reporting you to the police, they never would have been able to take the money through the din of the mashkus to din of the you, then I'm a muster.
What about in the case with the
clear?
Rabbi
Tauber, really? He didn't get into taxes that much. Let's not get into taxes.
The case
though.
of the mafioso.
Yes, halacha yud. Yeah.
So even though I saved my life, I owe the guy the money.
Clear.
Okay. So now that I owe it, can he actually take me to Bezdin to collect?
Probably.
Or is one of these guys?
Yeah. No. Chayv din ayod.
100%. That's what. Oh, Maharshav wrote down. That's exactly what he wrote down. That is his tshuva.
Actually, the Alter Rebbe says, it's not so clear, Alter Rebbe says, Al pi beizin shiur aleim chayv l'shalom. You have to go to a beizin. It's not always. There's a lot of cases, and I think he mentioned, let's go to the bottom of here, 9 Gimel. It's a machlekes, he writes between the Rambam and the Tur, and the Raivit, and the Shach, and don't ask. So he brings it, it's not so simple, Danny.
No, because
if he saved his life,
you're a little fish, but he's a huge fish. And he's going to lose a ton of money.
No. If it's money against money, I'm allowed to report him. So money against doubt of life. In other words, let's practically, Rabbi Tauber connected that to the case of the FBI, because when they come to me, the threat that they have against me is not only they're going to fine me, is that they're going to incarcerate me. So if I have the threat of being incarcerated over my head, and I can get out of that by getting someone else incarcerated. So first of all, I'm just repeating what Rabbi Tauber said. He feels that there's a difference between a federal jail and a state jail.
That's not what I'm saying.
That's what he's saying.
I'm saying if I give up my money for his money, he has big money. I'm a little money.
So he owes you that money. That's the story of the donkey.
I owe him the money.
The opposite. He owes you the money. If you saved his money, it's your money. How are you saving? Okay, how are you saving yourself by going to jail? By pointing your finger at him?
Yes.
Are you? Forget about the amount of money. You're. How can you point? You're not allowed to point your finger at him. So there's a few details. There's the heter of the marshal. If you were totally innocent, you can point your finger at him across the board. Now, if you were not innocent, if you knew that something here was not kosher, and if your life is in danger, and pointing your finger at him would only make him lose money, then do that to save your life, and then do you owe him the money, ask a Rav. But if it's not that way, then you can't master. You can't.
I'm afraid of the mafia. How can I tell the mafia to go to the other guy? He's not going to be afraid of the mafia. He's not going to be afraid to die. Is it a hashash of life on his life? I mean, my life is...
There's different types of mafias, and you know what the mafia wants. Like I'm
just assume that
you don't assume every country we're living in America. In Brazil, I know a kidnapper, you know what they want. You know, you understand this type of crime, they want money, this type of crime is a chashash. You get when you live in a third world country, you understand how they work, what they want.
I don't think you're necessarily talking about mafia. You're talking about when the government wants to they want to get paid for it's not that clear.
Because we're mixing up the FBI story with the Alter Rebbe, and Yud is speaking about an anas. Anas is a mafia. A guy who's coming b'koyach, totally wrong, and he's trying to krat someone.
Rabbi, what if the knock-off Jews guys, the guys who are knock-off Jews, let's say there's Levites,
yes.
They say you owe us because you're costing us.
No.
So I can tell Levi, I can't tell that, you know, I can tell the company.
According to the Marshal, you can tell, if you did not know, you can tell everyone.
No, because according to Sibal, if I point my finger,
uh-huh.
Not a monster,
uh-huh.
But and then it's the Inishmaya.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So if I tell Levi, this guy is selling knockoff jeans, I'm not a monster, it's the Inishmaya.
Correct.
But
correct.
If as a result, they're going to go to the officials who are also looking for him, and he gets arrested.
Then you're a monster. Then you're a monster. But then you're... So you caused Mesira, good question. I don't know.
What happens again, though, basic case where somebody's gone under the threat of the authority? The authority's actually the father. He knows it, you have to still tell the truth, right? And what if it's going to be again?
What do you mean it's under the threat of the
authority? Or do you need an example along the FBI coming and say?
They're coming to me and they're asking me, where did you buy this from?
Right. So So now, if you know there's no threat to the FBI.
What do you mean there's no threat to the FBI?
You had a situation, you said there was a situation where the FBI could arrest you if you didn't.
Yeah, when they come and they demand information from
you. They're not going to arrest you. They're just asking to stop.
Then why should I give them away? Why would I give anyone away?
No, because you have to see your eyes lie.
That's me. I'm allowed to lie.
You're allowed to lie. You're not to divulge that information that would make you a Muslim.
Okay. I think the correct halachic answer to you would be that saying you don't know is not called a lie.
That's.
You're allowed to say you don't know anything you do know. That's not one.
You know what? You don't know.
Don't
plead
know
here. You say you plead the fifth. Yeah. Here you say you plead the fifth. Pleading
that's
the fifth
okay.
is not lying. Plead the fifth. Yes.
And you can give over the other guy.
Yes.
But according to Jewish law, they're both totally innocent. Even if they know. There's no issur in making a bag with 90 jeans. It's not an issur. There's no property. There's no ownership damage. You don't have a...
That's irrelevant. That is irrelevant. Rafi, there's a big... Rafi, there's a difference between money and life incarceration. Let's just get that clear. Case he gave was that I'm gonna be pointing my finger at someone who's gonna go to jail. Simple. And if I'm not gonna point my finger, I'm gonna go to jail. You have to remember what the Marashal says. If I was totally innocent, I'm allowed to do that. Period. It's a good shuvah to remember. It's not written here in the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. Now, if not in the case of the Marshal, when I'm guilty, so now it's about a danger to my life, I'm allowed to save my life by putting his money in jeopardy. I cannot save my life by putting his life. I cannot protect...
You're only guilty according to their life.
Doesn't matter, but it's either me going to jail or him going to jail. Then I cannot put him to jail to save myself from going to jail.
But the Marshal says I can save my money?
Marshal...
If I'm innocent, I can save my money?
Yes. You're innocent. If you're innocent, you're allowed to go ahead. You were schlepped into something.
It's logical. I mean, think about it. You didn't know. You're not thinking you're buying the right thing.
You're saying if you're innocent. I understand. You're innocent, then on the boat. Or you're innocent, then on the door. That's sure Rafi's question.
You might be innocent, then on the door. This is still a factual determination that in the world, they're going to put you in jail. My understanding of Marshall is
if there's no danger.
No, his question is if there is danger, I'm going to jail.
No, I thought that in this scenario, that even federal prison wasn't danger.
That's what Rabbi Tauber said later. Correct. Federal.
If you're innocent, you can save even for money. But I'm saying that in this scenario, I mean, it's just, there's no, it's all moisture, it's all their laws, it's not our laws. There's no innocent and guilty. We're innocent according to
our law. You're still subject to their law. They're still going to lock you up.
So then you're saying there's no mesira. So what's you're challenging the whole thing of this? What's mesira?
It should be mesira. The whole thing should be
the opposite.
Maybe the Maharshal is talking about
the Maharshal is talking about
stolen goods. Stolen goods.
Let's go back. No, that's the Maharshal. Okay, let's go back.
We should say it like this. The tshuva.
Okay, let's keep on going.
Rabbi Zayt, we should say that the tshuva is about a case. And the Shulchan Aruch is a collection of rules that the world who is practiced can apply. So we can't say from me we're going to deduct something from the tshuva like that.
He's asking about
stolen articles. It's not stolen articles.
We have to read. We have to read the tshuva of the Marshal. Okay, let's go by it. Okay.
You know, Rafi's saying if it's stolen intellectually, then according to this Torah, it's not.
That's not correct because then you're nullifying the whole din of mesira. Mesira means the whole thing of mesira is I'm not allowed to put a Jew's money or body under the rulership of goyim. Period.
So how can
you
understand the
Marshal? One second. If I'm innocent and I'm innocent,
yeah.
and they're coming to me to get me. And the reason why they're coming to get me is because you put me into the situation. So I can protect myself by giving you up. That's what the Marshal said, in any situation. What Rafi has nothing to do with the fact that the government is only coming with Din of the Malchus and not with Din of Torah. It's irrelevant. Then there's no Din of Mesira.
Rabbi Tamar told him, this words out of his mouth, if you knew when you were in on it, then you can't tell on it. If you didn't know, then
just,
you
that's
know.
What, that's what the Marshal says.
He didn't know. Either way, whether he knew or he didn't know, according to Torah law, he's innocent.
That's not, no, Rafi, no. You're mixing. Okay. If your logic would have been correct, then erase the whole law of Mesira. Then only say Mesira means independent if the Goyish, the Goyish Ahalacha is correct or wrong, right or wrong. Irrelevant. I'm not allowed to give you over to the hands of the Goyim. Period. And certainly not if I'm putting your life in danger. If I'm making you lose money, if I'm telling you the government, Rabbi Tauber did say once that you didn't pay taxes, and all they're going to do to you is take the taxes from you, and you owe the taxes, then I'm not a Masir. I'm not a tzaddik, but I'm not a Masir. But the concept of Mesira means that if I'm putting you into bodily harm, even if the government is going to put you in bodily harm wrongfully, I'm not allowed to do that. Even if it's a mafioso, it's not a government. There's no din. Am I allowed to, that's the case. A guy is coming to me, a mafia guy, and he's asking me to show me where Rafi lives. I'm not allowed to do that. And if I do it, I'm a musser. I'm only allowed to do it if my life is in danger and I know he's only after your money.
And in the case where you were the counterfeit goods, if you were really, you knew about it, where he says, in such a case, you cannot tell the other person.
No. Correct. What's the question?
So, no, I'm saying, why over there would you say that if you did tell him the guy, there is Mesira?
Because the Marshal finds a heter. Everyone did something wrong.
Right.
He says, if you did nothing wrong, and the reason why you found yourself in that situation is because that guy put you in that situation. So you can protect yourself.
Sure.
That's all the that's not for sure. That's the truth of the Marshal. Taking that out, if I'm not allowed to say something which is going to make another Jew's money or body be under the dominion of the Goyim, that's the din of Mesira. And then there are exceptions for the rule. One of the exceptions, Rabbi Tauber is very strong here in America, is if a guy hit someone once, call the police. Right away, once, call the police. Not a wife hitter, God forbid. A guy in the street, to Hasidim, had a fight, call the police. For one time. Okay. Another thing he spoke about being carefully mentioned over here, about not, I don't know if you notice, Rabbi Tauber is quoting a lot from the Nesivas. You know, it's good just to, Rabbi Tauber, just to get a little bit of history. The Alter Rebbe, we know, passed away in 1812. I'm saying the Goyish years, because most people get the Goyish years. In that time, there were a few of the greatest later poiskim that lived in the Jewish people. One of them was called the Nesivas HaMishpat. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Loberbaum. He was born in the city of Lisa, and he was a big... Yeah, that's the same one. Now we got him. There you go. So there was two. There was a chassid, a Rabbi Heller, who wrote a commentary on Choshen Mishpat called the Ktsoisa Choshen. And then the Misnagid, with the Nesivas, wrote a commentary called the Nesivas HaMishpat. And he is from the greatest halachic authorities. When the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch wrote the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he writes in his introduction that he's taking the Kitzur from three of the greatest halachic authorities whom he considered, which was the Alter Rebbe, the Nesivas HaMishpat, Rabbi Yaakov, and from the Chachmas Adam. That was a Jew called Avraham Danziger. They all lived in the same time. The Chassam Sofer also lived in that time. He lived in the beginning of the 18-something, and he was a Rav in Bratislava. These were big poskim, so many people heard of the Chassam Sofer, but in the more yeshivish words, you become more familiar with the rulings of the Nesivas. He says that the Nesivas made a tzava for his family, who are all Rabbanim. The Nesivas HaMishpat was the great-grandson of the Chacham Tzvi. Okay, the Nesivas HaMishpat told his children and his grandchildren that in those days it was common for people, when they came into a city and they needed to safeguard their articles, they used to give it to the rabbi. So if you came into the city, you had a few thousand dollars on you, where are you going to leave it? You gave it to the Rav. So So he told his children never to take that money. And why should they never take that money? Because he was afraid that they're going to be tempted to borrow it and then to put the money back. And he spoke about the prohibition about damaging your fellow's property, is even if you're planning to, you're borrowing it. The guy left with you $10,000. You're going to take $20 just to get the coffee, and then later you're going to go to the bank and take out the $20. You're not allowed to do that. He said that you're allowed to do it to tzedakah money, but you're not allowed to do it from individual money. And in order not to bring yourself in that temptation, he's prohibited his people even of taking that money. I don't know what... Okay. Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, but I'm talking about this issur about niske mamon, that you can't take someone's money even if you plan to return it. Going back to halacha aleph. Okay, in halacha yud aleph.
You also mentioned that by Shiner Safar. So
if the end of halacha yud, correct. Very good. That if, when do we say that I'm a lot of maser? So the mafioso is coming to me, the government is coming to me, the government is asking me to rat you out. Then it's complicated. To be very careful. If you can't do it, hoo-hoo, then it's the biggest sin. But what happens if the government is not coming to me to rat you out? I'm in possession of your car. I'm a guardian of something that belongs to you. The government is after you, but yours thing is in my house, and they know that. So I'm not ratting anyone else. Speaking about money, so I can put up a fight or not put up a fight. So the Alter Rebbe says, I don't have to put up a fight. If the money is in my hand and they came there, then I'm a shomer. And the halachas of a shomer is if I'm an oynes, if people are coming and they're grabbing it out of me, I don't have to put my life in danger to save a... Exactly. Okay. Halacha Yud Aleph, in page Kuf Chavav, an interesting dinim, at least to make a quick synopsis. And there are two dinim that it was to make it clear. There's a din of maras ayin. I'm sorry, din of ayin hara, and there's a din of tznius. Let's not confuse it. The din of ayin hara is that even though ayin hara is not a physical thing, but we believe that a person through envy and or jealousy, when we look at someone else's things with envy or with jealousy, we can cause them or their things damage. And even though we don't overdo this, but it's a reality, and therefore there are halachic consequences. And the first halachic consequence is in the case the Alter Rebbe gives from the Gemara, is that when someone's field is full of produce, it's right before they're going to cut it, I'm not allowed to look into the field. Because when I see someone else's business, like big and full, so even though that part of me might be envious or jealous, and I can damage someone else's property. So that's one din, and that's also why when two people live near each other, the Alter Rebbe goes into putting up a wall of a chshash hezek ha'ayin. This is a halachic ruling which has to do with to protect oneself against an ayin hara, or I need to do things not to cause someone, even without my intent, to cause them an ayin hara. And then there's another din that the Alter Rebbe went into, was the law of tznius. So the law of ayin hara is I cannot look into someone else's property. The laws of tznius would imply that I have to do certain things to make sure that other people cannot look into my property, because I have to be modest. Just giving an example, you know, a person should not eat Holland or whatever he mentioned. People should eat out in the street. People do certain activities in their home in front of everyone. And there's a concept of tznius, that not everything you do should be seen by everyone. Not because they're going to cause me an ayin hara, but I have to protect my own modesty. You gave an example, a woman cannot say, I'm going to bathe in public, and you don't look. And if you look, it's your problem. That's not a tzniusdik mentality. Tznius means I gotta be more private. I think that was a very good wording, just to make a kitzur of the halach yud aleph and yud beis, not to confuse one with the other. He said he had a nice insight when Bilam, the fact that Bilam realized that our doors are not facing one the other, and he praised us, Matei V'alach Yaakov, that proved, the Rabbi Tauber said, that Bilam was a peeping Tom. Because Rabbi Tauber says, if I would, I wouldn't even have noticed that. It's only people that have this disease of looking into other people's homes realize, gosh, they set up their homes in such a way that you can't even do that. So, that was a good insight into that. But, you know, the Altarebbe speaks about the prohibition of looking into other people's properties, again, because of causing them damage, taking away their privacy, and that included, he's speaking about tapping, or he's speaking about, right, putting a bug, bugging other people's phones, all that has to do with the prohibitions that he speaks about in Halachi. That's not the Ayin Hara, but I'm not allowed to intrude on other people's privacy. We learned about... where are we up to over here? Aloch Yudalid. Yeah, about damaging someone else's wall. He mentioned a few things that were not even written inside, but they're very important things. One thing he mentioned was very powerful, was something called a tikkun of the Rabbeinu Tam. He said the story was, he said a story that there was a moil, there was a sheichet. That was the story that he said, that there was a sheichet who had a baby. And in the next town there was a moil. So he sent for the moil. Really, the baby was a baby girl. And the moil, when the moil came to the city, it was like a joke. He made it as a joke on him. And he came to the city, he made bris, I had a girl. And the moil got very insulted from the prank, and he took him to court. And he took him to the Chassam Sofer. What type of damage did he cause over here? So again, time is not there. So the humility, that's where he went to, that he humbled him, that that type of emotional damage that he shamed him, yeah, but outside of that, so he said an interesting thing. So he went back to history. There was a time when the Goyisha courts, when the government disallowed Jews of putting out a cherem. I forgot in what era that happened. That was in the time of the Rabbeinu Tam. So the Rabbeinu Tam made up something which is called today by rabbis a tikkun Rabbeinu Tam. He fixed it. Tikkun Rabbeinu Tam was a way for him to make a cheder without calling it a cheder. The Rabbeinu Tam made it in cases where halachically a man was not forced to divorce his wife, but they wanted a man to give a wife a get. And he wasn't giving a get, and they were not allowed to put him into chedim, so he made a tikkun de Rabbeinu Tam, which is some type of social boycott with a lot of consequences, including not making a bris milah on their children, including not burying the dead. It's almost like a chedim. It's not called a chedim, but you make a decree that no one can have any sort of interaction with them. All right? It's different than a siruv. A siruv today means if a guy is called to the bezdin and they don't come to bezdin, you shouldn't give him an aliyah, because you don't do business with them. That a tikkun de Rabbeinu Tam is like a mamish, like a cheder. By a seat of the counter in the minyan, and by tikkun de Rabbeinu Tam, I don't remember if you mentioned minyan, it could be a cheder, no. In any event, so the Chassam Sofer went ahead and he put a tikkun de Rabbeinu Tam, even though the Rabbeinu Tam made it for a get, and he put it for the shoichet, but he used that as a tool that people should for him to go ahead and for him to appease. He mentioned another couple of things that I got from Benny's notes. I reminded there was a big rebbe called Rav Shmelke of Nicholsburg. I don't know if it was here or not. And Rav Shmelke of Nicholsburg had a chassid who had a son. And Rav Shmelke was a moil. So he invited his rebbe to be the moil. And this rebbe came late. The son or the son-in-law, one of the mechotanim, one of the family members, one was a chassid of Rav Shmelke. Say the father was a chassid of Rav Shmelke, but the mother's father was a big misnagit, and he was very upset that he was the moil, and he came late. And the chassid, the father, went out to go look for him, to go get him, and the zayde, is the mother's father, got a moil to do the bris. So we learned the din that it's prohibited to take a mitzvah, to steal a mitzvah away from the other. It's aser. Just like it's aser to take money away. That was the case that he gave. He just mentioned that in that story, actually, Rav Shmelke was a wise man. He came in over there and he heard what happened. He did it not to calm the fires down. He was very happy and he went to the Sudas Mitzvah and he was extremely joyful, and he explained to people that the reason why he's so joyful is because when you do a mitzvah yourself, you have to have all the right kavanas, and who knows if you did it b'shleimus, maybe you were lacking in something, but whenever you want to do a mitzvah and you ended up not doing it because someone else did it, on him you say it's ki'ilu asahu, it's as if he did it. Who says that? God says that. So then it's as if you did it on the highest level, and he made a big simcha out of it, and that brought a shalom in the family. But there's a halachic issue, he said, about grabbing one people grabbing a mitzvah from the other. Okay, then we went into many halachas regarding noise. Remember that? Noise, smell, and dust. Very good. Which he included into smoke. Also called and there's a big difference between the Alter Rebbe, between noise and smell and smoke. Smoke is a problem. Smell is a problem. Noise, it only is a problem if it causes people headaches. That was an interesting differentiation. He also mentioned, again, a practical thing, Rabbi Tauber, that even though there are times when I'm not allowed to make a smell or I'm not allowed to do certain things that will damage you, but if you can, through closing a window, if you can prevent the damage getting to you easily, then you don't have a case against me. That was a very important note that he added to what to the details of the Alter Rebbe. Because I'm making a terrible stench. So in the olden days, there wasn't air conditioning. You were stuck with your window open. You have a tie-in against me. But today, close your window. He says that in Bnei Brak, or in Israel, he mentioned there was a lot of dentators regarding lights, the lights that people put in front of their houses. And when people walk by, it shines. And people complain that it goes into their windows during the night. So they made it into a non-issue because buy a $3 shade. And if you put the shade on, then the light is not going to disturb you. This is what's not written in here, but all of these laws of damages are only relevant if it's not a problem. But if one side can easily, you don't have to be right, but you know, buy a shade. Or in such a case, we learned about the dinim of Zayin Tuva here in Halacha Yudches. This is very important about the eminent domain halachas, and it's very limited, their power of eminent domain. They don't have too many rights, and the few rights that they have to do it if everyone is there with them. And then we began learning Hilchas Niske Mamin, which is in page Kuf Lamed Aleph. And we learned its terrible severity of hitting a fellow Jew. You're not allowed to hit another Jew. And it was there about the Minyan that I remembered, that he says that if you hit someone, even once, that you cannot count them in a Minyan. Never. Ever. Ever, and the only way to do it is in order for you to call a court, and the court has to somehow take away this chedem that happens automatically when you hit someone else. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. So when I then made a joke, let's make a bezdin. It wasn't a joke.
Three Jews.
Correct. Correct. Then another interesting halacha, just another kitzur halacha base. Alter Rebbe says that when I hit someone else, that I violated the law of pentoisif. Every time God says don't do something, you normally get flogged. The reason why if I hit you I don't get flogged is because I'm chayiv five things: nezek, tzar, riper, shevus, and boishes. And whenever I do a sin for which I get a financial penalty, I don't pay and get flogged. But if I hit you and the damages is less than a pruto, so now that there is no monetary punishment, I take get the malchus. I get malchus even if I hit someone with a zetz less than a shava pruta. And the only time I'm allowed to get physical, the last things we were learning, is if someone enters my home and doesn't want to leave, then I'm allowed to physically remove them. Obviously, if I can push them out, better that than hitting them, always the minimum. And he says the same thing goes to a shul, but it's not that everyone in the shul has the right to kick someone else out, but it has to be, if it's the gabbai or if it's the certain designated people, should be the only ones who have that power. But sometimes you have to do it. These are the few exceptional cases where you are allowed to hit. And again, for the camera, this was a very, very general chazara.